Don't sweat costly vehicle repairs this summer. Instead, donate that unused car, truck, RV, or boat that's been taking up space in your garage or driveway to the SoCal Sound today and help keep the best radio content and the SoCal Sound sessions on the air for years to come. It takes just a couple minutes to get started. We take care of the paperwork and the pickup is free and your gift is tax deductible. Go to thesocalsound.org, click support, or call 877-527-6123.
A very happy Wednesday evening to you all, and welcome to The Soundtrack. I'm your occasionally genial host, Lavelle Spiro, and tonight we have a very special guest, singer, songwriter, guitarist, all-around awesome person, Paul Freeman.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. And tonight, Paul is here with his band, Welsh Wolf, to play some songs live in person for us. Paul, welcome to The Soundtrack.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. It's nice
a pleasure.
To be here.
Well, I can't wait to hear you guys. Tell us what you're going to play first.
I think we're going to do Antisocial Butterfly, which is a song off the forthcoming EP, Voyeur's Dream.
A Voyeur's Dream.
And yes.
I love that song. Okay, so, well, let's not mince any more words. Let's dive right into it. So this is the band Welsh Wolf, singer-songwriter Paul Freeman, and Antisocial Butterfly.
When I realize that maybe I'm an antisocial butterfly that tries but never finds the light. Got a vacant smile, I can make the rounds, but you don't wanna be there when the sun goes down. Looking at the picture, feeling missing out, but when the storm hits, I don't feel it now. Hey, is everyone this way? Reckless, trying to feel alive, wasting all my money. Have I really lost my mind? Wait, have I lost my mind? Or maybe I'm pretending by drowning out the sound. But when the storm hits, I don't feel it now. Hey, is everyone this way? Hiding a lonely face through the broken clouds. Oh, I can't see it. Hey,
I love that song. And this is one of the Welsh Wolf songs coming out on the new EP.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yeah. It was probably one of the last ones written for the record. But it was one of the more recent songs,
okay,
at least.
Cool. Well, let me introduce you a little bit to our audience before we play more music. We have this amazing band in here. You are a well-known singer-songwriter. You've opened for and toured with acts including Joe Cocker, Todd Rundgren, Chris Cornell, Chris Isaacs, Roger Daltrey, and The Who, to name a few. That's a pretty impressive list. I mean, why didn't you tour with the Rolling Stones? Were you going through a lazy period or something?
Yeah, I took a week off. That. Yeah.
Wow.
No, Thank you for that. That's so nice. When you said all like back-to-back like that, it sounds like, oh, I haven't been wasting my time after all.
Yeah, no, not so much. Well, some of these bands you were touring with as a guitarist, vocalist, others you were the warm-up act for.
Yeah.
I know that when I met you, which is a few years ago, you had just come off a long tour with The Who. And as their warm-up act, it was just you and then an acoustic guitar, right?
Yes.
Warming up stadium-sized crowds.
Like arenas and stuff like that. It started as I started doing a tour of the UK with Roger Daltrey, and then he kind of was like, oh, we like what you're doing. Do you want to come on the road with us? So I was like, yeah, sure.
Us The Who, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, cool, that sounds fun. Let's go and play some arenas.
you're going out on stage in front of literally tens of thousands of people as a solo act. Isn't that kind of, what's the word, terrifying?
You can only really see the first three rows anyway. So after that, you kind of you forget who else is out there. you just hope that, you know, there are people after that.
You're just focused on the first three rows, the lit ones.
Yeah, totally.
Wow.
But I've never really suffered from like nerves in that sense. I think maybe when I was like 11 years old, I did my first ever performance at a school, like talent competition. That's the last time I remember really feeling terrified to go on stage.
Wow.
And it went so badly that I think I just kind of threw all of my nerves away and went, well, I was pointless being nervous for that rubbish. So I always get excited, or there's a moment of like butterflies or something,
sure,
but I wouldn't say that I suffer from like stage fright or nerves,
right,
in any way.
You convert that energy to performance energy.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Did you actually grow up in Wales, or is this like an accent you put on to impress American women?
No, it was that's how I got my wife, yeah.
With the accent?
Yeah, with the accent, yeah.
So you're,
I'm from Baltimore.
So it's...
Oh. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Paul, I did grow up in Wales.
As you guys probably can hear already, Paul is a very low-key guy. You don't know that he's played in front of tens of thousands of people. He's just like a normal person. Quasi-normal.
Quasi-normal.
So how old were you? You grew up in Wales.
Yeah.
Cardiff or the...
Yeah, just outside Cardiff.
Just out Cardiff. Okay. And how old were you when you moved to London?
I was 16, nearly 17.
And
I left home. I finished my GCSEs and did so poorly in them that there were no higher education options for me. So the only option left was to leave home, and go and join a band.
And your folks were okay with this?
Like, my dad wasn't around at that point. So it was only my mum that needed convincing. So, and she didn't really have much say in the matter. So I just...
Wow. Wow.
Kind of packed a bag and took the guitar that I had at the time and
You have a flat to stay in London?
So I moved kind of just outside London first and worked part-time in a recording studio. So I learned how to like splice tape and do that. And I would travel into London for band rehearsals and stuff like that. And then I did that for about 6 months and then finally got a one room in a shared house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was like £45 a week.
And
to have this tiny room in a house, and I found a job as a carpet fitter.
A carpet fitter?
Yeah. Okay. I was doing that part-time and then in the band in the evenings.
What do we call those in America? Carpet layers? Fitter sounds nicer.
Yeah, fitter.
Everything sounds nicer.
Yeah.
English accent.
I don't know if I was any good at it, but I enjoyed it.
Well, listen, we're going to get back to more annoying questions in a moment, but we have this very talented band in the studio, so I would love to hear another track, please. Tell us about the song you're playing next, The Ever Hours.
Oh, The Ever Hours. That is it's a really personal song, actually. I wrote it about my childhood in Wales, with this idea that I have no contact with anyone that I grew up with, you know, kind of age 10 to 12, 13, because we moved around a lot when I was a kid. So, but I love this idea that the friendships that I formed in those kind of early formative years, I love the idea that they live in this place in my mind that's always kind of, the sun's always setting and we're always on our bikes riding around the neighborhood. So it's kind of a nostalgic feeling to the song.
That's lovely. Well, let's take a listen to this. This is The Ever Hours from Paul Freeman and Welsh Wolf, live here in the 885 SoCal Sound Studios.
The street lights all came on. Nothing was ever over till they called us home. We had the same houses but different lives. I don't remember if we ever said goodbye. We climbed walls and fell from trees. In the afternoons they were gold and they were green. The ever hours hold the pieces of a dream that got away. In the ever hours we threw our open arms around the days. The memories might change, to me you're still the same. Those cups hurt more hearts than any fist or word could scar or ever see.
Yeah.
The best way to stay up to date with the SoCal Sound is by signing up for our email newsletter. Get the inside scoop on station events, ticket giveaways, and pre-sale opportunities. Go to thesocalsound.org and click sign up for the email newsletter at the top of the homepage.
I'm Lev El Spiro. You're listening to The Soundtrack right here on the SoCal Sound. We are visiting tonight with L.A. and Nashville-based artist Paul Freeman and the band Welsh Wolf. Paul, the EP drops next week, Tuesday, June 3rd, right?
Yeah.
And there's a release party Tuesday night?
Tuesday night at three clubs in Hollywood. Be there or be somewhere else, probably.
It's a very confusingly named club. It is, in fact, one club or is it three clubs?
Three clubs squashed into one room, okay. I think. So, yeah.
So you don't have to physically play in three places.
I don't have
once.
To, no, but it is, I think they want you to. I think we're three different outfits is what I think what they're going for.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So it's very like an EDM club, a heavy rock club.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, I'm going to go back a little ways in your catalog right now to talk about some of the work you've done for film and television.
Yes.
First, there was a song that was used for the 2006 romantic comedy feature, The Breakup, with Jennifer Aniston and Vince Vaughn, I think it was.
Yes, that was the first
that
one.
Was, the song was called Well, Well. But I want to talk about a song that you wrote and performed in the series Marvel's Jessica Jones, which was a great series on Netflix. Can you tell us about that one?
That was a really fun experience because I was asked to try and write something for it, and I was stumped a little bit. But one of the things that I like to do when my wife is getting ready is I'll go into the bathroom with her while she's doing her makeup, and I'll sit on the edge of the bath and just kind of serenade her a little bit while she's doing her makeup.
Oh, that's lovely.
And this was one of those moments where the song came to me while I was watching her put on her makeup. And I did like a 10-second little voice note. So when the request for the song came in, I had this song that was just sitting on my iPhone, just ready to go. And I sent that over. I was like, is this kind of in the ballpark? And they were like, yes, that's perfect. Go finish that. So I spent the afternoon finishing it up, and I did a vocal guitar recording, just a really simple one. And that's actually what ended up being used in the thing was in the show was just the acoustic vocal that I did that
I
afternoon.
Didn't know that story.
Yeah, it's just one live take. I did it in my living room with two microphones.
Wow. You know, I have tried serenading my wife while she's putting on her makeup. She asked me to stop immediately.
That's because you kept putting on her makeup.
Well, there was that too, but that's a whole different thing. Well, let's have full disclosure here. The series that we're talking about Marvel's Jessica Jones was a show that my wife was the showrunner
for. She
is, and yes. You and I have been friends for a while, and she loves you dearly, as do we all. And I want to get Paul to play a song for this. And you were actually on camera for this series,
yes,
right?
That was the fun part. I got to go over to New York, and she was very kind and took very good care of me.
Yeah.
And I had my own trailer on Fifth Avenue, which I've spoken to my wife, who's a actor. Doesn't happen very often.
No.
That you get your own trailer,
yeah.
Especially not in the center of New York. And I got to be on camera and had a couple of lines, and I'm sitting in the scene, in the background of this scene, playing the song, and then at some point the camera kind of zooms in on me and sees my face.
I'm glad that was fun, because sometimes, you know, they have to divide the song up into like 20-second takes, and it's just annoying because you have to keep picking it up.
Right.
So
yeah.
did the director let you kind of do the whole song a couple times?
Yeah, I got the whole song. I think I probably did about three takes, and then, you know, they did coverage and stuff of me pretending to play the song while she was shooting different angles.
And that song, I think you told me once, it went on, kind of hit the charts in Europe.
It did pretty well, yeah. It was on, I guess, in like that singer-songwriter world, like it was number one in about five different countries on different charts.
Wow.
And stuff. Yeah, I was super surprised by it. It was lovely.
Was that driven by the television show?
I think so, yeah. The power of television still works.
Interesting. So television can very much drive music sales, or at least listener attention.
Very much
in your
so.
Experience. Okay. Very interesting. Okay, well, let's get back in our time capsule. Go back to London for a moment. You get there and you're 16 years old. You're fitting carpet.
Uh-huh.
You're a fit carpet fitter.
Back then I was, yeah.
And how do you get from being an unknown Welsh guitarist to touring with people like Joe Cocker and Roger Daltrey?
That was a slow and steady period. The band that I was in at the time was called Bodecker, mm-hmm. and we got a very small deal with Boy George's label.
Okay.
Must have, we did two albums with them. And through that, I had access to more people within the music business. And, you know, Boy George would invite various people down to the show. And one of the people he invited to one of the shows was a guy called Mark Owen, mm-hmm. who was in a boy band called Take That.
Okay. Are we in the early 90s here?
No, we're in 2000s at this point.
Okay.
Yeah. And Mark was about to do a solo record, and he and I hit it off. We played football together on a Sunday afternoon, mm-hmm. and we then went down to the pub afterwards and started talking about music. And he was like, oh, you should come and try and write some songs with me. And I was like, okay, sure. So we did that, and the first song that we wrote ended up being the first single, and it went into the top five in the UK.
You're kidding me.
So that was kind of my, yeah, I really owe a lot to Mark Owen for Take That. He was the guy that gave me my real break in music.
How did he know that you were a songwriter? He had heard
just
some of your
from
work.
Talking. Yeah, I'd played him some of the Bodeca stuff, and then we kind of got talking, and he was like, "Oh, you should come and write with me."
That's amazing.
Yeah, now, I was really lucky.
I mentioned that in addition to Cocker and Daltrey, you toured with Chris Isaacs, Chris Cornell, Todd Rundgren. Was there a time that you burned out on touring, or did you just want to focus more on your own songwriting?
No, actually, touring's my favorite part of doing this, yeah. To see the instant reaction of something you've created is like, that's my favorite part of it. Because, you know, you go into the studio and you can make it sound shiny and new and great, but there's no feedback, mm-hmm. you know, and you know, we play it to your friends and you hope they like it, but when you have it in front of a live audience that doesn't know who you are, then I feel like that's the tell. So being kind of, there was a few years there where I felt like I was just the perpetual opener for people, which was really kind of fun because you just got a brand new audience every night that you have to win over,
right?
And I enjoy the challenge of that. I love that.
So cool. Well, I want to play one of my longstanding favorites of yours. This is from your last album, Shotgun Skyline, and it's the song Even Our Heroes Fade. I think you told me once this was a tribute to your grandfather.
Yes. Yeah, it was written about my grandfather who had just passed when I wrote it.
Oh, amazing. Okay, well, here it is from the album Shotgun Skyline by Paul Freeman. This is Even Our Heroes Fade. Even Our Heroes Fade by Paul Freeman from the album Shotgun Skyline. Speaking of heroes, do I remember correctly that your dad named you after Paul McCartney?
He did, yeah. My dad is the biggest Paul McCartney geek in the world. He could probably tell you how many hairs Paul McCartney still has left on his head.
That's getting into stalker territory. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm guessing that the music of the Fab Four was something you heard a lot of in your youth.
It was actually, but he played me Wings first. So when I was about 9 or 10 years old, and he was constantly playing Venus and Mars, that album around the house, and he played the live album, the triple vinyl. He was always playing that. So it wasn't until I was about 11 years old or something like, yeah, I was definitely older, that he was like, oh, Paul McCartney was in a band before that called the Beatles. I was like, can I hear those? And he was like, and the first thing he played me was the cover of Twist and Shout live at the Hollywood Bowl, which is such an odd choice for a first Beatles song to hear.
But that's very funny. It's like, yeah, Paul McCartney was in this other band before Wings.
But he's such a massive Paul McCartney fan. That's why I'm called Paul James.
I know you're also a big fan of American blues rock. People like Tom Petty, Bruce Springsteen. Were they big influences on your songwriter? And what was it about their music that appealed to you?
Probably my dad's influence growing up was always, he would always point out what a great song was in his opinion, you know, but it was always coming from a songwriter's perspective as opposed to a production standpoint, or he would never really point out, listen to how good the drums sound on this song or whatever. It was always like, listen to that lyric. He was always pointing lyrics out. And then I would say the Springsteen influence probably came in when I was in Bodeca. We had a manager for a short while called Philip Tennant, who's a lovely, lovely guy. And he pulled me aside one day, and I think he maybe saw something in me as a songwriter, for, you know, just separate from the band. Mm-hmm. And pulled me aside one day and invited me over to his house for a Saturday afternoon glass of wine and played me all these amazing early Bruce Springsteen records that my dad hadn't introduced me to. So that all this part of Springsteen's career, and basically told me that all the songs I had at that point were all rubbish and that I should go away and come back next week with at least one good song.
Wow.
Because at that point, I was writing 5 songs a week, and I was just like, I'm writing so many songs, and they're all great. And turns out they were all crap. And so he sent me away with just the job of come back next week with one good song.
Wow.
And he sent me away with Bruce Springsteen's second album to listen to. So I just took a deep dive into that record, came back the following week and played a song. Still remember Sad Eyes and Sirens was the song that I came back with. And he must have liked it because he immediately called about four of his friends to come over for drinks and had me play it about eight times that night.
Awesome.
So it was really that. So that was probably, he was probably my gateway into Springsteen and therefore into really getting to the bottom of what, you know, how to write a decent song from top to bottom.
I want to play a cut from the EP now. It's called When You Cry. Is there anything you want to tell us about this song before we listen?
Probably just that it's a really self-aware song. It's written about my early 20s when I probably wasn't as good with the ladies as I am now with my wife.
With the lady singer.
The lady, yes, exactly.
She's just here in the studio.
It's written from a female's perspective of calling the guy out for his ball.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a listen to it from the Welsh Wolf EP, A Voyeur's Dream. This is When You Cry. When You Cry from the band Welsh Wolf and singer-songwriter Paul Freeman. And I think Ross, your lead guitarist, also did some writing on that
one. He did, yeah. Correct? We wrote it together.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. I love hearing you guys play off each other.
Yeah, it's really, stage. I mean, Ross is a really integral part of the band and what we're doing. His guitar playing is obviously amazing, but just his guitar parts are really inspiring to write to. So
wow, that's nice. And I know you're not just saying that because you want free medical care, but
he really is a wonderful
guitarist.
I mean, that goes without saying.
We mentioned a couple of the American songwriters that influence you, but you've also talked about bands like Oasis, Blur, The Cure, great British bands all. So I have to ask you, how do you find yourself on stage performing with The Who, one of the great British rock acts of all time? This is from Daltrey?
Yes, came through that. Yeah. And at the time I was managed by the same people as The Who. And so they thought that it would be a lovely fit to put us on a bill together.
And you once told me a great anecdote about you were on stage when Simon Townsend, Pete's younger brother, couldn't make a gig
or two. So I had to fill in for him. The first one was at the Royal Albert Hall.
Okay.
But it was the Teenage Cancer Trust night, which was really fun because Steve Winwood also needed a rhythm guitar player. So I got to play rhythm guitar for Steve Winwood as well that night.
Awesome.
Which was really fun.
Okay, but you told me this anecdote about you tried to improvise some guitar licks with Townsend on stage.
Yeah, don't do that. I learned that real quick. He also taught me how to play Pinball Wizard correctly, which was great.
Okay. But when you improvise something, was there?
Stare across the stage. Stare, and you're like, oh, I'm in trouble when this ends.
Oh, that's very funny. All right. Well, here's a taste of one of the songs Paul was playing guitar and singing backing vocals on from one of my favorite rock albums of all time. And we're going to meet a very special guest right afterwards. This is My Wife. And speaking of wives, we have another one of my favorite people in the world here today. Paul's wife, the amazingly talented actress and shockingly good human being, Ms. Erin Cahill. Hi, Erin.
Hi. Yay. I've got him fooled, ladies and gentlemen. I managed to fool him for how long
for
now, Lev?
I don't know, 15 years or so. So full disclosure, Erin and I have been friends since working together on a movie in 2012. And I don't like to advertise, so I won't say the title, but it involved the city of Beverly Hills and quite a few chihuahuas. And Erin, along with Frances Fisher, you are absolutely my favorite non-chihuahua actor.
Thank you. You
guys have been married for 9 years. Do you have any advice on how to be married to a musician?
I love that question. Well, I can't believe it's going to be 9 years in September. It's crazy. I can't believe we've known each other so long.
You act like you still like each other.
And we do.
Yeah.
Great. I would say the majority of the time. I'm just kidding. Actually, that's kind of the perfect segue into our answer. I think.
I don't know what you're going to say. So.
I know. Actually, you don't. I think the trick to being married to a musician is just being grateful for the time you get together. You know, between our two careers, we travel quite a bit, and I think it gives us a chance to miss each other. It also gives us a chance to have individual lives, but we're such a pair. It's like we're two whole units. We're two whole humans coming together to make a unit, not like two halves.
That's lovely. Yeah. Although you could also read that answer that the key to having a good marriage is spending time apart.
that's where I was going with it.
I'm sure that's not what you meant. Well, listen.
That is definitely not what I meant.
On that note, let's hear another track from Paul Freeman. This is from his album Shotgun Skyline, and it's called Churches and Rivers.
Oh, I love this one.
Churches and Rivers, another gorgeous song from our guest, Paul Freeman. Paul, you spend about half your time in Nashville and the other half here in L.A. Can you tell us, how is the musical scene different in Nashville?
Nashville definitely feels more community-based. Mm-hmm. I feel like, even aside from the country music that happens there, I don't really get too involved in country music down there, but the community of Nashville is very uplifting and supportive of each other, in a way that LA is very separate. Mm. And not in a bad way, it's just a different experience. Like, you know, pop writers here tend to stick in their field, and
I see.
You know, yeah, it's very
more. There's more kind of cross pollination.
Yeah, in Nashville for sure. Yeah.
Okay, interesting. I know that your management has gotten you into producing other artists out there.
Yeah,
is producing something you enjoy doing?
I love it. I really love it. Yeah, and partly because, you know, to be honest, I'm not having babies, so it's really nice to learn all this stuff over the last God knows how long, and be able to send it forward to a generation coming up behind. And also, it's inspiring to hear, you know, to be inspired by the younger voices coming through. It's really, I learn a lot every time I get into a room with somebody.
Very cool. Well, recently you produced a new artist, a young lady named Belle Blue, and you put out a track called Woof. I should say, completely unrelated to any Chihuahua movies.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of dogs going on here.
Yeah,
Welsh
wolf.
The best.
Yeah, yeah. But it does sound very different from your own work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's a force of nature. She's got a very distinctive vocal style. She's got a very distinctive delivery. So it was, you know, working with her was just kind of leaning into that and trying not to get my own stuff on it. I think that's what, you know, I'm trying to do as a producer is amplify the artist's voice as opposed to go, you know, oh, yeah, this is what I do, so
right,
I'm going to put all that stuff on your record now, you know. So it's, yeah, trying to step back and listen and amplify what she's doing.
Well, this is a really cool track. Let's take a listen. Produced by Paul Freeman, this is Belle Blue, and the song's title is Woof. That is very cool, very fun. Did you also play a bunch of instruments?
Yes,
on that?
I played all the guitars on that.
Oh, I really like that guitar solo.
Oh,
it's
thank
very
you.
Melodic.
Yeah, I don't, because Ross is so good with Welsh Wolf, I don't need to play guitar solos ever. So I only ever get to play them when I'm in the studio.
I'm not sure how to respond to that. Ross, if you're listening now, well, listen, in the time we have left, let's talk more about this talented group of musicians you've gathered over the past years. What made you decide to call the new album Welsh Wolf instead of Paul Freeman?
Because I was doing the singer-songwriter stuff for so many years, I got bored of my name and wanted to kill that character. Almost like I would imagine in your world, you kind of, as a writer or director, you kill off a character to make it more interesting. So I wanted to give birth to a new character, and the songs that I was writing for this project didn't really feel like they sat alongside some of the older Paul Freeman acoustic stuff.
So something that freed you up creatively.
Yes,
too.
Yeah, and I feel extremely free by it.
We have time for just one more song.
Yeah.
We're going to let Paul go back in the studio. But first, I want to thank you for coming out here today to share your
thank
music
with us. Thank you so
much
for having me. What a thrill. What a thrill.
Folks, thanks for joining us on The Soundtrack. Here's one more song from Welsh Wolf Live here at 885 SoCal Sound Studios. This is Sleepless Souls.
SoCal Sound Sessions are a production of 88.5 FM, The SoCal Sound. Session hosted by Lev L. Spiro. Audio recorded and mixed by Tristan Dolce. Video version shot and edited by Matt Blake. The SoCal Sound is a public service of California State University Northridge and Saddleback College. You could find The SoCal Sound on the radio in Southern California at 88.5 FM or streaming 24 hours a day and through our free app at thesocalsound.org.